have student debt? I have student debt.
I mean, student debt is just, it's everywhere now.
It's rampant.
Days. Yes, guys.
One might say it's a crisis.
It's definitely a crisis. Guys, welcome back to the We Rebel podcast. This is James and Emily again.
Coming in hot.
Talking about
our financial hardships.
You know, and student debt is something that's affecting people all across this country.
44 million people across this country.
To be exact. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about that this week. So we've got a wonderful guest from Student Debt Crisis who's going to explain a little bit about what the crisis is at the moment, what we can do about it, what are some options, including a game show.
Yeah, which I'm trying to be on.
So guys, stick around and listen up for our interview with Student Debt Crisis. Okay, everyone. So welcome Cody Hunanian, who is the Program Director of Student Debt Crisis, to the We Rebel podcast. How you doing, Cody?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Lord in heaven.
Absolutely.
As someone who recently paid my monthly student loan payment this month on time, everybody, really proud of myself. Mm-hmm. We're really excited to have you because this is an enormous crisis. We mm-hmm. are truly in a financial crisis. We dug around online and found some stats that I'm sure you have memorized at this point. But for our listeners, CNBC reported in February of this year that it was $1.5 trillion of student debt, and that people, when they graduate, the average borrower has about $37,000 in student loans, which is a $20,000 increase from 13 years ago. In July, the New York Times came out with the debt number being $1.4 trillion. I mean, we can keep finding all of these numbers, but Cody, where do we even begin to talk about this? Because I don't even know what that amount of money looks like. Like, I'm trying to imagine it in cash, and I'm like, it would fill a room.
Yeah.
It would fill a building.
Yeah.
You know, so what is it?
That's exactly the point. I think we start with framing the crisis for exactly what it is. I'm so happy that you started with that word. It's so important. This is actually a crisis. And of course, those are huge numbers, $1.5 trillion, 45 million of us with student debt. But we know it's a crisis, not because of the numbers, but because of how it impacts people who have student debt. You just paid your bill. I just paid my bill actually as well every month. It's a huge impact. It prevents people like me from, you know, starting a family, going back to school, all of the above are things that I've faced. And so when it begins to really hurt our lives, that's when you know it's a real crisis. So starting there and knowing that people are really sacrificing a lot really starts to frame the discussion in a way that's really important. These are people's lives that we're talking about.
Yeah, because you see, I think millennials always get the blame. They say, oh, the millennials, they're lazy. You know, they're so worried about their avocado toast and their Instagram pictures. And it's like, you know what? I mean, maybe we have to post really happy pictures because we have no money and we're just trying to make it look like everything's okay. But on the inside, we're screaming because you have some people are paying upwards of $300 a month just on student loan debt, as well as the rent that they have to pay, and they're paying for groceries and car notes and things like that. And so let's start with, you know, college education, which is where obviously a lot of this debt is coming from. What is our issue right now that we're seeing either with public, and I know specifically we're having issues with private institutions or for-profit colleges. So where are we at right now with that, on that side of the debt crisis?
Well, you know, when it comes to the for-profit schools, there is just an immense amount of profiteering going on that leads to, frankly, fraud and abuse. Student loan borrowers are being misled into programs that have, bad and poor results at best. They are forced into predatory private student loans that have high interest rates. The for-profit education sector is really just a huge machine. It's chewing up borrowers and spitting them out. But on the public university side, there's still a huge problem there that schools are not getting the investment they need from state and local governments. You know, we're being told that the economy is doing very well right now, but in many states, we haven't gotten back to pre-recession school funding. So, you know, that's a Those are costs that have been passed on to borrowers, parents, students. It's why we are having to pay more in tuition, why we have more student loan debt. That's an issue that hasn't been addressed yet either.
I want to touch on the word you just said, investment, because when I pay my student loan each month, I play a mind game with myself and say that it's an investment in my, you know, past, but also future, because I have to pay for the school I've already had. So I'm a little curious, you know, what are the numbers around those investments that are not happening on the state level again? Because I went to a public university, you know, and they are also, you know, fundraising on the side. So what are those drops that we're seeing from the government for these local institutions?
After the recession, there was such a pullback on state budgets. And in many states, like here in California, higher education can be one of the largest expenses. So universities took a huge hit. And that came out of course, cutting back on teachers, cutting back on resources like books and supplies. And of course, it also means increased costs for other things that students need, like housing and other things on campus. So, you know, for all of the budget pullbacks, it still costs just as much to go to college for students. And so we see borrowers having to pick up more of the cost for books that are no longer subsidized. You know, classes are getting fuller, there's more competition, and so they're more expensive. Really, the cost-saving measures have not been cost-saving for students and their families.
And I wonder then, so at this point, you were saying that we haven't gone back to pre-recession rates. Mm-hmm. So I want to think in the, so I would say roughly that's been about a decade, right? Just a little bit over that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do you think what are the numbers then? How far up have we moved? You know, how has that increased? Like, how many more Americans are now in debt than we were before that, if you happen to know those exact numbers?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know how many more people are in debt because of that, but I can tell you every year schools are still spending about $9 billion below 2008 funding levels. So you can imagine that every one of those dollars has been replaced by a student having to either pay out of pocket or finance with a student loan. So, you know, that's $9 billion in added expenses just from the change in budgets and investments from state and local governments.
Right. And that's another number. I'm like, how many 20s is that? And what does it look like? 9 billion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to even conceptualize. That's how big this problem is. It's a number that almost is imaginary. And, you know, that's why when it comes to really defining what the crisis means for people individually, that's what really matters. You know, 1.5 trillion, 1.6 trillion, 2 trillion, these numbers are just out of control no matter what. But what really matters to people is, can I make my rent? Can I put food on the table? Can I, you know, buy new clothes for my kids for the new school season?
So with this scope and this understanding, quote unquote, alleged understanding, you know, how is your organization beginning to tack away at this problem? You know, what are you're very clear on your website that you're building awareness and fighting on the national level for better policies. But, you know, how, if you were to break down your programming, you know, where are you tackling the problem?
Yeah, well, you know, our approach always takes three different prongs, and it first starts with educate. Part of our mission is to make sure that borrowers understand their debt, that they can make informed decisions. Not only does that, of course, help them personally, it helps the crisis, but it also means that they're free from their debt and they can participate, advocate, and fight for their rights a little more fully. So it's really important that we educate folks. You know, the next step then is fighting for legislation. We, from the beginning, have always supported, you know, big ideas. Student loan forgiveness programs and debt-free college are things that are important to us. But we talk to too many borrowers who are suffering right now, every day, struggling with their debt. So, of course, we support, you know, smaller incremental fixes that will help borrowers. And that includes, you know, a federal refinancing option, strengthening the income-driven repayment programs and simplifying them because, frankly, they're very confusing. And of course, we protect consumer protections that have been built over time and are also, you know, at risk right now that really serve to protect borrowers from predatory colleges and student loan companies. So, you know, it's a big picture approach that also includes fighting for very niche policies that do have a big impact for borrowers every day. And then, of course, outside of education and legislation, what is really important to us is giving borrowers a supportive community. We speak to people every day online, through our website, on Facebook, and on Twitter, who are struggling. They're sharing their stories, and by talking to one another, it's very cathartic. And so that part of our community is really important.
Yeah,
it is very cathartic to talk to friends about this.
Absolutely.
It's one of those things nobody's talked about. You know, people don't talk about their debt or their finances, but this issue has become such a big eye issue. People are coming out to talk, and it's really important that that they have others to share those stories with.
Well, I keep going back to the social media thing, but think about how many times you look on your Facebook feed, someone posts like the day that they paid their last student loan payment. Because what a relief that is, you know?
That's a dream day. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge thing. So I want to talk a little bit about who I deem as one of the true enemies of the state, Betsy DeVos.
Yes.
So obviously she is a complete wreck to our education system, and like she needs to be out of that position yesterday. But we just learned on the 25th that she has now proposed to curtail Obama's administration loan forgiveness rules, which they were supposed to go into effect last year. And right about a month before they were supposed to, she said, no, we're going to rewrite it. We're going to do our own thing. And as we all knew, she was more so on the side of businesses and for-profit institutions. And so now people that were tricked by these for-profit institutions, like Corinthian College or like ITT Tech, you know. So now these students have to prove that they were misled by advertisements or whatever, and then maybe they will get some assistance. First of all, that's messed up. That's terrible. Why? This is like seems like the most evil way to say like, oh, well, you lost all your money. That's fine. You still need to pay us. And it's like, no, you were an institution that wasn't honest anyway. And like now everyone knows it, so I don't have to prove that. But okay, so anyway, for students that are in these kind of situations, what can we do for them? What's their next step?
Yeah, well, I think first, having any discussion around the student loan forgiveness program does require a disclaimer of you have to do your research, because student loan forgiveness is a bit of a trigger word for folks. It's been, I guess, kind of warped over time. There are so many programs out there, it's very confusing. So first, let me clarify. There's public service loan forgiveness, and that's eligible to folks who work in public service jobs. And then there's debt forgiveness and debt relief for folks who have been legitimately defrauded and, you know, frankly, scammed by a for-profit college. And these people have been very patiently waiting for a very long time to access debt relief, and now it's been completely gridlocked and jammed by Betsy DeVos. And so, you know, our advice to these folks is, of course, first, continue to apply for all of the programs that you think you are eligible for. Part of the strategy here is to continue to build support within these programs by showing how many Americans really depend on it. Right. So how many people have truly been defrauded by these companies and can access relief? It's hard to tell unless people apply, speak out, you know, and try to access this relief. So we encourage people to not be discouraged by changes in the policies. Advocates at Student Debt Crisis and the partners we work with are going to keep fighting for them. But I also want to just connect the dots here. And what's important to note is Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education are trying to stop all of the student loan forgiveness programs that exist. They're gridlocking this program. They've proposed completely eliminating the option for public service workers. And so we need to be on high alert about what the bigger picture is here.
And, it's so daunting to hear that, you know, it's like why they're trying to gridlock all of that. And, you know, what are the, I don't know. I feel helpless in that kind of situation. Like, what can you do about that? I guess like we have those programs, but obviously this comes into legislation, and we need maybe a Congress that can step in and say like, hey, this is wrong. This is we're taking advantage of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. What can we do? You know.
Well, you know, of course, calling on Congress members and legislators, it does work, and we have to be vocal. But I will point out that the for-profit college students and those who are trying to access relief through this program called Borrower Defense, they actually have had some major victories around just grassroots organizing. These are students who have organized around their own issue together, have been very vocal, and a lot of it's been story sharing. And so I think it's a great example that, you know, homegrown organizing around issues that can seem very small, like maybe your own college closing and scamming you, can grow into a nationwide issue that's got the whole Department of Education addressing it. So I find this issue to be a fantastic example of what we can do as individuals who work together when we can't necessarily rely on everyone in Washington.
Right. And so I think, so are you referring to the borrower defense application? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, so the issue at hand is this mechanism called borrower defense to repayment. And what it is that if you've been legitimately, you know, defrauded, lied to by your college or program, the federal government in the past had offered full debt relief. And so it had been cut down to partial debt relief, and now it's been completely gridlocked. So this program is something that folks who have been taken advantage of by shut down for-profit colleges, it's really important to them.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Sorry, we had to take a breath there.
I needed to breathe for a minute. Amazing. So I think a question that I have is, you know, what do you think at this point is the biggest success we've seen? Because I feel like with this grassroots activism, we're quick to jump to our problems, which then makes us all very sad, and it's hard to keep fighting. So I'm curious if there's any like points in the past couple of years or since you've been working with the Student Debt Crisis Organization, you know, what are some successes that we've seen that we can also look back as case studies?
Yeah, well, you know, it has been a tough couple of past years, but we've had some major successes in crafting income-driven repayment plans that are more helpful and more beneficial for borrowers who are struggling. We've made progress there. We've made progress in identifying the biggest bad actors in our industry. Betsy DeVos is, you know, of course, somebody that has garnered unprecedented attention. But I'm inspired at times by some of the things that borrowers are still fighting for. You know, when you're crushed by student debt and struggling at home, there's a lot on your mind. And thinking about the things that actually matter to you is maybe a lower priority. But our supporters come out to fight for, you know, debt-free college, tuition-free college, whatever you have it. They were just happy to hear that every candidate brought a platform to the table. I know heading into 2018 in my local district, California's 25th, every candidate had a student loan platform. They talked about public service loan forgiveness, and they even addressed student loan servicing flaws. A couple of years ago, these were issues that were really wonky, and they've made it all the way to my local candidate for Congress. And so those are major wins to me. And I hear from other borrowers that we represent all over the country that their local representatives are taking this issue on as well.
Yeah. Do you know some candidates that are running? Because we are upon the November elections. And so do you know any candidates that are on the side of getting, you know, helping to curb student loan debt? Do you know some people that are that we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, you know, in my district, California 25th, which is actually a district that is going to come down to a fight and could be flipped. The current candidate right now is a person named Katie Hill. We as an organization, me as an individual, haven't endorsed her, but I was impressed that early on in the campaign trail, her and her colleagues who were running as well all had a platform that addressed making college affordable, but also helping those who are already hurt by student debt. I think that's really shown how far this issue has grown, because it started as people talking about their student debt. It then grew into an issue that began to include college affordability, and now people are realizing that both issues are tied hand in hand. So I was impressed to see on the campaign trail that my local representatives or my candidates were talking about this issue.
And that's what was so remarkable, I think, last year about, or I should say 2 years ago with Bernie Sanders, which was, it was wonderful to hear a candidate, you know, on a national platform saying, like, we need to make college affordable for students. It's ridiculous the amount that we're charging them. This education should be accessible. We shouldn't be putting people into debt just because they need to learn. And I wonder, do you think, I don't see this happening anytime like tomorrow or like next month, but do you think we are on the way to getting affordable, possibly free education at a higher level?
Absolutely. In my opinion, debt-free or tuition-free or however you want to define it, free college is going to be as palatable in the near future as high school, free high school was, you know, at the beginning of this century. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a fact of today's economy that if people want to compete, they need to be high-skilled, they need to have higher education. And at some point, we're going to be forced with the choice of either investing in it or not. And I know we will make the right choice and we will invest in it. And I like to remind people coming out of California that 50 years ago, free college wasn't a dream in California. It was policy. And I don't see why we can't get to that place again. And, you know, you bring up Bernie Sanders' platform, College for All. Our supporters were very supportive of that platform because it addressed cost of college, but also student loan debt, current student debt. And so we've seen that baton. It's been passed. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has brought on that platform a bit as well. And so some big names are continuing to carry that message. And we certainly support a vision that makes college accessible for everyone.
Amazing. And so I was just digging through, your website. And for our for our listeners, there's a tab called Student Loan Tools, which is abundant with information. And if you keep digging, it looks like you link to another website called theborrowers.org. I'm curious, beyond what's on there, you know, is there any other things that you're tracking that can help provide information for people that are trying to figure out the best options for their repayment plans?
Sure. So thank you so much for visiting that part of the site. The tools for us are really important because, you know, we can't touch every borrower who has student debt, but we can help them empower themselves and give them the access to the information that they need. And so we have tools on our site. You also mentioned theborrowers.org. That was a resource site that we built because, frankly, borrowers were telling us that they were calling their servicer and not getting the information they need. So we've hosted over the years several free hotlines where borrowers can call and get information. But in the recent months, we've really had a lot of success with online webinars, and we can connect with 500 to 1,000 borrowers in an hour and talk about repayment plans and answer questions. And of course, we get all of our information directly from the source, which is the Department of Education. It can be hard, so we translate it and make it more palatable, but we want borrowers to get the right information directly from the government and skip all of the misinformation and bad information they're exposed to elsewhere online.
So through this process of connecting with so many different borrowers, have you come across any like really creative ideas that people are doing to, you know, come up with the funds to pay these loans off? I recently stumbled upon Shared Harvest, where freelancers can donate time to nonprofits, and then Shared Harvest like gives them whatever their hourly would be to go directly towards their student loans. On your website, you mentioned that game show called Paid Off.
That's a fun new pop culture twist to the student
I mean, I saw that and I was like, get me on the show. So have you heard of any other really creative things that either your borrowers are doing or other organizations are doing to help bring some joy and progress on like the actual monthly payments to our fellow graduates?
Yeah. So, you know, we do our online webinars and we talk to other people who do other types of educational events. And we met a group of teachers in Minnesota who do local student debt workshops at their local craft brewery.
Cool.
I love craft beer. You know, I'm a millennial, and so I'm one of those people, a beer snob. And so I thought that was a really fun way to open up the discussion in an environment that wasn't so stale and, I guess, sterile as, you know, a financial discussion. But that game show paid off. Is one of my favorite developments right now. Borrowers deserve a little bit of fun. They deserve a little bit of break from all the stress that is the student debt crisis. So giving them an opportunity to have a little fun, pay off some of their debt, see others who are, you know, dealing with it as well. I think it's a fantastic idea. And I don't know if you saw that show. One thing I do want to point out, it's really the only creative approach that I've seen that not only helps people pay their debt, but really addresses the crisis, advocates for change, you know, really has the heart necessary to help people, but not ridicule them, embarrass them, or anything like that. So, you know, for those who haven't seen it, paid off on True TV is fantastic.
I kind of want to just go on the show now. Like I'm very lucky.
Hear that from everyone. How do I get on the show? Yeah. Stay tuned. I don't even know.
I feel like the demand for that show is like exponentially higher than, you know, other reality shows like The Bachelor. You know, screw finding love. I want to be debt free.
And three people an episode. So you know what? We can do 15 million episodes. We've got plenty of seasons.
This show is gonna last, y'all.
So True TV. Yeah, they could just ride off of that one show, and they could go on. Well, I don't want it to go on forever, but I'm just saying.
Go on until it is necessary.
Yes. We say that, and so does the host of the show, Michael Torby from Orange Is the New Black. Mm-hmm. We're always just like, put us out of business, like fire us. Solve the student debt crisis so we don't have to work on this issue anymore. That's our dream, is to not have a job, please.
Yes. So at this point, for anyone that's listening, you know, if maybe they've already gone through a couple channels on how to solve their debt. What are the ways people can get involved with you guys to start their process of diminishing their debt?
Yeah, student debt crisis really got its start online, doing online advocacy. So visit our website at studentdebtcrisis.org, sign some petitions, maybe share your story. And then, of course, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at debtcrisis.org, because policies are changing at light speed. We really want to keep you up to date as much as possible.
Okay, so Cody, the last thing I want to ask is for people at home, people down the street right now, if they want to get involved and on the local level, and you know, besides like, you know, maybe signing a petition, endorsing a candidate, what are the ways that they can move forward with the progress of ending student debt in this country?
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the first years that voters are going to be able to go out and vote on student loan issues. So make sure that your candidate has a positive platform that helps borrowers, and make sure that you vote. And if your candidate doesn't have a platform, go to a town hall, ask them questions, and demand that they come up with some sort of proposal. It's a crisis. Everyone should be working on it.
Absolutely. We 100% agree on that.
Yeah. I got my serious face on.
Yes.
This is a real thing.
It is. All hands on deck, and we will do it.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, Cody, thanks for your time, and thanks for your ongoing work on a crisis that is close to my heart and many people's hearts. Mm-hmm. And
me as well. I have student debt, just like you and just like many others out there. So it is really something that's important to me as well. I make a payment every month.
Every month.
Yeah. So guys, just know that there's just know that there's hope out there. Again, please get involved. Go to studentdebtcrisis.org. There's so many ways and resources to help you. And people like Cody are fighting the good fight. So, Cody, thank you so much again for coming on the podcast with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Emily and James. I appreciate it.
All right, y'all. It's time for our spotlight series. This week we have Sharnessa Ridley, who is not only a fellow Southern woman like myself, but also a true activist who has a full-time job with the North Carolina Coalition Against Sexual Assault and is the president of our spotlight org, North Carolina Women United.
North Carolina Women United is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to achieve full equality and empowerment for all women through grassroots activism, community organizing, legislative advocacy, and engagement in the political process. Founded in the early 90s as the NC Women's Legislative Agenda, this project facilitated grassroots meetings across the state where women could discuss issues of public policy concern and learn to advocate for the issues that concern them. This signature event continues today and remains one of our biggest accomplishments. We hold biannual Women's Agenda assemblies. This event brings over 200 women from all across North Carolina to the state capitol for one day of networking and action. We start the day with training and resources designed to educate and empower women who otherwise may be worried about talking to their legislators. The afternoon is spent at the North Carolina General Assembly meeting with various representatives. North Carolina Women United is a membership organization. Our membership includes a host of progressive individuals and organizations that are doing amazing work in and out of our state. We are governed by an all-volunteer executive board that consists of individuals who represent different agencies within our membership. Some of those agencies include North Carolina Coalition Against Sexual Assault, League of Women Voters of North Carolina, and NARAL Pro-Choice. For more information about our board, including current vacancies and ways to give, as well as a complete list of our membership and links to their website, you can find us online at www.ncwu.org. Follow us on Twitter using the handle at NCWU, and of course, like us on Facebook at one word, NC Women United.
And that's it for this week's episode of We Rebel podcast. As always, please feel free to contact us if you have any questions for the two of us or our guests at WeRebelPodcast@gmail.com.
And you can find us on all the social medias at We Rebel Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
See everybody next week.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Beth.
And we host Everything is Rent, a podcast about the Broadway musical Rent.
Every week, we're joined by a hilarious guest to talk about one of Rent's 525,600 songs.
We'll answer questions like, is Rent the best musical of all time?
Has Rent aged well?
Are they not going to pay rent?
The answer to all these questions is yes.
That's Everything is Rent on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.